Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner. Today, I'm joined by a new member of my team who recently appeared on webcams, Elliot Miller. Elliot, would you like to say hello?
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to your, tentative spot on Cloud Cover while Hachi's out of town.
Sounds good.
Great. Today, we have special guest Vlad Vinogradsky. Vlad, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Vlad Vinogradsky. I'm a principal program manager on the API management team.
Great. Fantastic. Before we go into what you're going to talk about today, we're going to go over a little bit of news today. This is news from kind of the past week and a half. Lots of big stuff happening with TechEd Europe going on. One of the big announcements actually TechEd Europe and I think TechEd Australia as well. One of the big announcements that was just made, though, was that the regions in Australia for Azure are now live. So now you can actually start deploying stuff into the Azure data center. So for all of our Azure users down under, this is really great news. I know they've been, long waiting this moment. So some other stuff. One of the announcements we made recently was the marketplace. We've got some new stuff coming out for the marketplace. I'm pretty sure we announced support for Cloud Era and a few other things just last week at the Cloud Expo or the Cloud event. So we've got a lot of new features and improvements on the networking stack. So there's network security groups, multi-NIC support, forced tunneling, some enhancements to the express route, new VPN gateway sizes, new audits and logging, advanced configuration, source IP affinity, just tons of stuff here. So Azure Automation Services has GA'd, so that's now approved for production use for everyone. That's great stuff. There's a new preview service called Azure Batch for scheduling job service in parallel and for HPC apps, so check that out. Great to use. Also going GA was Microsoft Anti-Malware for VMs and cloud services. So if you need to install anti-malware services onto your VMs or cloud services, this is now GA'd and available. Also, some general availability of some other VM extensions, such as the PowerShell desired state configuration, Octopus, which is a deployment tool that's quite popular, Visual Studio Release Management, some really great stuff. So that's the news for today, and now we're going to hop over to our main presentation.
And now, our feature presentation.
So, Vlad, what are you going to talk to us about today?
I'm going to talk about some new features that we recently released as part of Azure API Management.
Great.
And I'll show you how they work and what they're for.
Okay, cool. Now, you've been on the show before, and we've got other videos that we're certainly going to link you to underneath this show with some, more of the intro to API Management. But really quick, can you kind of give us, a 1 minute overview of what API Management is?
I'll give 3 minute overview.
Okay, perfect.
Very quick. So essentially, why APIs, right? So people expose APIs for various reasons. Top three, in my mind, are APIs as a product, right? So in that case, basically, company ships the API and monetizes it directly. There's companies like Twilio that do that, and there is many other examples out there. The other one is making your product into a platform, essentially bringing value to your product, essentially, right? And that's another sort of great way to leverage APIs for your business. And then internally, APIs make a ton of sense. For unleashing sort of creativity within the organization, removing barriers for writing applications, and increasing productivity as a result. So these are sort of kind of three things why people would want to, top three things why people would want to use APIs. Now, when you start thinking about APIs as products, for example, and exposing them to different sets of developers, some which you might not even know, they could be, sort of general developers out there in the public, you face a lot of interesting challenges, especially if you are an organization which has a lot of back-end services, a lot of functionality that they want to cram into the APIs. First of all, you need to adapt your back-end services to something that is presentable outside, that has reduced maybe API surface, that has modern URL structures, expose modern URL data, modern response types like JSON, etc. So you really need to build facade over what you have. Then you really need to bring developers in. Developers need to be able to discover your APIs, understand how to use them, subscribe to use them, acquire subscription keys so that they can call API and be an authorized user of that API, play with an API, get to that first proverbial call to the API in a matter of minutes, right?
I think that's actually, sorry to interrupt, I think that's one of my favorite features, because if, you know, I look at companies I've worked with in the past, and, you know, if one team makes an API for, you know, product X and one team makes an API for product Y, usually there's this big disconnect of, you know, hey, here's the documentation on this API, here's the documentation on this API, but it's disorganized, it's certainly not centralized. This, you know, easily gives you one place you can go and see all the available APIs, all the documentation is kind of standard formatting. It's really easy to figure out, you know, whether it's internal your own company or just what is, you know, this company exposing. It's super easy to find.
Absolutely, that's a very crucial point. And lastly, you know, not lastly, but next, you know, of course, you know, you have developers now, you've got, you sort of expose your APIs the way you want to expose them. Now you need to protect them, right? With keys, with rate limits, with quotas, security-wise. And then you need to actually monitor and understand who is using those APIs, where from, when, which APIs are most popular, what are your most active developers, so you can sort of drive maybe offerings towards them or give them some kind of recognition, et cetera. And then, of course, management, right? Everything, you know, is moving, everything is changing, so you need to stay on top of lifecycle changes of your APIs, your services, et cetera. All those things essentially are the purview of API management. So API management products out there help with those concerns right out of the box. So they have features and capabilities to deal with all of these concerns. Some do, you know, specialize on some of those concerns more than the others, but in general, that's the purview of API management.
Great.
And as far as API management product, just to show you sort of what it consists of, it has essentially three things that ship in a box, which we call Azure API Management Service. It's a publisher portal. This is for API publishers. They come into that portal to manage the API ecosystem. This is where they define their APIs. This is where they assign policies to those APIs. This is where they interact with their developer ecosystem. This is where they look at reports, et cetera.
So it'd be almost like the admin aspect.
Exactly. This is management sort of a panel for your API program. A developer portal is external facing, and it is sort of public presence of your API on the web. This is where developers come to sign up, to play with your API, to read documentation, and see, actually we expose great analytics for them as well to understand how they and their applications are using those APIs that are exposed by the publisher. Yep. And so, you know, great, of course, hope is that these app developers will produce apps. And the trick is that these apps will actually go through this proxy thing that is, you know, a very scalable, low latency thing in the cloud that is part of API management, which essentially sits in between all the calls from the consumer to the service. And by virtue of that, it can mediate, you know, impose facade, impose throttling limits, protect the API, et cetera, et cetera. Important thing to understand is that the backend services that you expose through API management can be hosted anywhere and can be developed using any technology. We are completely agnostic to that. So they don't have to be in Azure. We'll love them to be in Azure.
Sure.
But obviously, they can be anywhere. And that could be legacy or, you know, other clouds and whatever.
So essentially, you could take a service you've got right now that you want to leverage, you know, maybe monetize, and just connect it right into API management. You don't necessarily have to worry about making any big changes or moving where you're hosting things. You just connect it to API management, and you can start exposing it.
Exactly right.
Perfect.
Cool. And with that, I would say that we have great videos recorded by some of my teammates and Josh Twist in particular.
And as well as yourself.
Exactly. And those videos actually go in a lot more detail in the sort of interactive and aspects and give a much broader overview of Azure API management. So we're going to have link to those
underneath
videos.
The video, we'll have links to those.
Exactly. And so you guys can go and watch it. And now I'm kind of dive into some specific features. So you know, feel free to follow. But if you need to jump off and watch those videos, that would be great.
Great.
All right. So let's bring up. So essentially, this is you know, familiar to everybody, management portal for Microsoft Azure. Here you see I have provisioned service called Epiphany. This is my API management instance. And so it has all these things that you would, you know, expect. It has a dashboard, it has, you know, certain configuration tabs here. But essentially, if you want to manage the actual APIs, you have to click this button, and that brings you into this management portal, right, which is separate and standalone. So this portal shows you sort of the dashboard and a bunch of other capabilities we discussed, you know, how to define your APIs, how to productize them, how to set policies on them, how to see reports, interact with users, you know, receive notifications and things like that. I'm going to go into this one specific tab, security, and we're going to sort of kind of noodle in here for the rest of this presentation.
Okay.
So first is API Management REST API. And you know, REST here meaning not SOAP, right? So we try to make a very good, you know, very nice, easy to use API with a very regular structure, very friendly to all the tools out there, and really, you know, a pleasure to use directly without SDKs. But we don't claim, you know, fully sort of REST compliance or anything like that. So don't imply that. We have a nice link here, which brings you into the API documentation. So, you know, if you're in doubt, you can always jump off and read docs to understand this documentation, what the API does. Okay. It's an opt-in feature, right? So by default, it's turned off, but you have to enable it. As soon as you enable it, all these things underneath appear, such as credentials and access token. Here's what's interesting about credentials. So credentials essentially are sort of ID, and then primary, secondary key, so you can implement key rotation policies. And I can sort of, you know, quickly show you the keys. So these are sort of long strings of text, numbers, and characters.
And if anybody's, if you've done other things with Azure, this is going to be a very similar paradigm where a lot of the services have a you know, identifier and then a key, and
exactly.
That's the access pattern.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very similar to SAS tokens, essentially.
Right.
You can regenerate them independently, as I said, right? But here's another interesting thing that we introduced, right? So when you want to use an API, you need to have two things, right? You need to understand how to authenticate, and essentially what the URL of the API is. And we give it to you right here, right? So management API URL is right here. So you can actually, you know, see it immediately. And it's basically follows the name of your service with management interceded, right? So your APIs are actually residing for this service under Epiphany Azure API.net. And under management subdomain, you have an API. Now here, instead of sort of programmatically generating the token, right, which you can definitely do, and documentation shows you how to do that, you can actually generate it right here, right? So you can generate it to expire at a certain date, which mm-hmm. is cool. So for instance, you know, today, right, I can say, you know what, I'm gonna just do it for 1 hour, right? For 1 hour only, because then when people start watching this video, this token will be invalid, right? So
sure.
So it's okay to flash it. So when I generate it, it's right there. And it's not only the token, which is this part with digits, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually full value of your authorization header. So all you need to do here is just snap it and copy it into your request, and that's it. You're done. You're authenticated.
Great. So if you need to test out your managed API or just access it really briefly, perfect way to do it.
Yeah, and it's also a way to, if you, for instance, have a partner and you need to give them temporary access to API, this is the way to do it. You know,
right.
And you can do it with secondary key. You can put time limit on it. You can generate key afterwards. It can protect you in many various ways.
Great.
Cool. So we've done that. So let's go into this little free tool that is basically allows you to make requests to RESTful APIs. It's called Postman.
If you haven't checked it out, it's super useful.
Yeah, it's very useful. It's very lightweight and very nice, and it allows you to sort of record your requests so that you can retrieve them, you know, easily afterwards, which is what I'm doing here. As you can see, here are sort of, you know, ground rules here about the API. First of all, there is a base URL, and underneath we have top-level collections for APIs, products, subscriptions, users, etc. So all the major concepts in the product, they're just top-level collections. And then underneath, you know, after that, if you want to refer to a single entity in that collection, you just supply, you know, you put slash and supply URL, an ID for that specific object. Mm-hmm. And then there could be, you know, another related either entities underneath or related collections. And so it's very, very regular in that sense. The other thing to note is that each request has to be commented with an API version. So API version is mandatory. And here I'm using variables feature of this Postman. But essentially, you know, you put whatever version you want to use right there.
Now, is that a version of the management API?
It's a version of management API, right? So right now the version here is 2014.0.2.14 preview.
Okay.
And then access token goes into the authorization header. And here it is, right? I already copied it there.
All right.
So we're good to go. So essentially, I'm going to make a call and see what we're going to get. And we get, at this point, all the APIs that contained in my API management system right now, in my API management service. So I want to walk you through how do you, programmatically, without touching user interface, add an API and then publish it, and then you can call it right from here without ever going to the portal. So we have this service that we built, which is very simple. It just adds two numbers. It's called Calc API. It has this signature of having a path add for add operation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pass two query parameters, A and B, and the result will be a sum of those. And so let's call it directly. It's completely unprotected, very simple API. It returns, you know, the sum and then some banner. So we want to get this API proxied by API management. But not only just proxied, we want to actually change it a little bit, right? So what's wrong here, right? What things we might want to change? First of all, query parameters kind of out of vogue, right? We want to pass parameters. We want to say add /99/1, right? Would be much nicer, less verbose. Mm-hmm. The other thing to note here is, well, you know, we've got XML coming out. That's not good, right? That's definitely not something people expect today, right? Today people want JSON.
Absolutely.
So we want to do that too, right? And the other thing we notice is that the other value that we can add with API management is, for instance, caching. Because if you can see here, these, you know, for this particular request, right, the answer will be always the same.
Exactly.
We might as well actually cache that,
absolutely,
right? Cool. So let's go in and onboard this API. So first, we're going to create a Calc API. For that, I'm going to just actually do a put on API's collection with an identifier of this new API, and I can assign it myself. It can be a string of random numbers, or it could be a very nice, you know, a string like that, which actually tells you what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And I say calc, right? So this thing's API will be created with an identifier calc. And here are its parameters, the name, where it's located, its description, the path under which it appears in the API management system, under the domain of API management service, and what protocols we want to expose it through. So by sending this request, we're going to get 201 created, which means it's done. It's there, right? The API is created. So now if we go back and query for APIs, right, we should see actually Calc API right there.
Yep.
So we created it. Very quick, very simple. Next thing we're going to do is we're going to say, well, remember that remember we wanted to actually start returning JSON. So mm-hmm. I'm going to actually put a policy on this API. For converting from XML to JSON, I choose direct transformation because it just looks prettier. And I would say, you know, apply that only when content type XML is returned by the backend service. And always look at the accept header and return JSON only when asked.
So basically, when you apply this, it's going to API management is going to automatically do that proxy layer.
Yep.
It's going to convert anything that's XML over to JSON for that API as long as the accept header is JSON.
You got it.
Sure.
So and now how would I do that? Very simply, right? Under APIs, I'm going to go to Calc element, to Calc API, and I'm going to set policy on it, right? And I'm going to put the policy for this API, right, in this API collection.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very simple to understand sort of regular way of doing things. And when I do that, again, 201 created, so presumably the policy is there. Now we need to add an operation to the Calc API, because right now we just have an endpoint. We don't know what resource path are exposed onto that. So let's add that one. And it's, again, a JSON structure which gives a name for the operation, the verb, the URL template, template parameters and the descriptions and types, as well as what responses it returns, right? So full sort of a description of this operation is right there in JSON body.
And this is how you're basically changing it. So instead of having the parameters be query sync parameters,
exactly,
they're now actually, it's, you know, /number/number.
Exactly, and so you will see that I'm actually lying here a little bit, right? Because we know that this Calc API receives A and B as query parameters, but here I'm saying these are path parameters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of cheating a little bit for now, right? So if I just do this, right, create this operation, and call the API, you know, bad things will happen. Because, you know, we'll just funnel it straight through as path parameters,
right,
and service will be very surprised to receive them and not going to do anything.
So you still have to add the thing that maps it from the path parameter,
exactly,
to the query string.
So now for this operation I just created, which I gave ID of sum, again, very readable, nice ID, I'm going to set policy on that operation, right? We just keep drilling into APIs, what API we're drilling in, operations, what operation, policy. And I'm going to set this policy, which does two things. First, it says, actually, rewire it to add with query parameters A and B, right?
Mm-hmm.
And second, I'm saying, you know, let's do caching, right? This caching for 3,600 seconds for an hour, just for fun. So let's do that.
I don't know if you're going to get this, but what sort of caching is it using behind the scenes? Is this something part of API management? Is mm-hmm. it built on one of the services in Azure?
So with API management, what happens is when you provision a service, it's a sort of a dedicated service.
Mm-hmm.
It has a bunch of resources inside it, and one of those resources is caching.
Okay.
And we actually use Redis cache, right, underneath, the one that Microsoft provides, but it's sort of packed in,
right.
And you really don't manage Redis cache directly,
so you don't
but you kind of enable it through policies and we'll take care of
it. So you don't have to worry about the administration of that cache. All you have to say is, hey, cache it and cache it for this long, and it's going to take care of it.
And this is not a general cache for you. This is specifically response cache used by API management on your behalf according to the policies that you set.
Okay, perfect.
Cool. So I'm also noticing that you're doing a lot of separate calls to create these APIs and to add policies. Is there any way to do all of this in one or two calls?
Funny that you ask. So there is actually on APIs collection, we expose a modifier for the put and get operation, which is basically sets the mode to import. And in that case, we're going to actually render the full API description as one JSON document. Well, JSON or other document, you know, JSON format that we render is our own, but we also can render those APIs in Swagger and in Waddle.
Okay.
And then we can also accept all three as an import so that you don't have to call these different things, right? So you can just in one swoop, you can create the whole API.
Great.
Cool.
So so with this guy, so we set the policy, right? So it was created. In API management, there is a concept of a product. So essentially, you associate your API with a product so that you can publish it to your developers. And then, you know, on product, you can set things like groups of developers that can be, you know, you can use this product, et cetera, control access. So we need to create, create a special product. You know, I have a couple, but I thought I'd create one just specifically for this API. It's very simple. Product has, you know, by default, you know, just a few fields here, name, description, terms of use, right? That's very important. And then if it requires, if sort of request for subscription require approval or not. And so I set it here. And send this request in. It's created, so if now we're gonna go and query for products. We should see a special product right there, and we see that it's in non-published state, right? So it's not available to anyone yet, it's sort of hidden.
Does that, out of curiosity, does that not published mean it, you couldn't call it if you knew it, like it's hidden, or is it just?
Yes, it's actually hidden, right? So at this point, it's inaccessible to people because you're still working on it, right? So you didn't push it out and said, please developers, come in, play with it, subscribe to it.
But if I just happen to know the URL format, like could I call it from the outside?
No.
Like, okay, so it's completely not available.
Yep, exactly. So, and lastly, so after creating this special product, we need to do two more things before we actually can call the API. We need to add calc API to this product. And then again, you see there's no body. It's a put operation. What we're doing is basically we're putting calc into the APIs of a special product.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very simple to understand concepts. And if we do that, we're going to create that association between product and API. And lastly, we need to publish the product. So here I'm patching it, and I'm patching just state to published, right? So I'm not, you know, I can actually do partial updates, right? So. And in this case, when you update things, right, you actually have to provide if match header. And here I'm saying, you know, I don't care about the version, right? You can basically do optimistic concurrency with this, but I'm just saying right now I don't care, you know, just override the state.
Mm-hmm.
So go in, done. So successful result. So at this point, if we look at the products again, double click. We have published product, you know, special product that we just created. So API should be associated with that. We can actually drill into by saying, you know, slash APIs and look at the API associated with that. But we're going to, you know, assume it's there, right? And at this point, what we can do is actually go, we can go and call the API with directly through the API management service, right? The only thing I need to do here is I need to actually have a proper subscription key.
Mm-hmm.
This one is the old one because we just created new subscription. So let's go and fetch subscription collection. And as you can see here, I have a subscription of user one. And that user one I know is an admin, right? This is who I am right now. For product ID special, right, that we created. And here are the keys, right? And I'm going to just basically take this key carefully and copy it into the request right here. Right? So at this point, what I'm doing is I'm calling calc API through API management with a new URL, which has path parameters rather than query,
mm-hmm.
with subscription key that I just discovered, and asking for XML. So,
and that subscription key is basically how API calls are tied back to who's making the request, and that gets into the whole metrics and
exactly,
and
exactly. So it shows you that it's an authorized user, right? So essentially that the person actually went and registered with the portal and received access to the API. And some of those products may require approval, which means that, you know, actually human has to agree to grant subscription to that particular person. So this is a kind of important thing to have.
Definitely.
And so at this point, when I do a call, I'm going to get my XML response as usual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can do exactly the same thing at this point, right? Not only I change the URL, but here I can actually go and replace the key again and call asking for JSON.
Mm-hmm.
And without changing the service, I'm getting JSON now.
Perfect.
Right? So I have caching, but I also changed how your API looks from outside and what kind of formats it renders, right? Without actually touching the service whatsoever.
Great.
So that's really nice. So at this point, that sort of API demonstration, right? As you can see, very regular API, very easy to use from any tool. It's easy to get authenticated. You literally can, you know, go enable snap, authorization header and make a call within probably to this management API, probably with a span of 30 seconds, right? If you know what you're doing. So it's really, really easy.
And to some degree, you've modernized your API without having to change your API because now it's JSON, it's cached, it's great.
Now, I showed you sort of how to work with APIs, but you can do exactly the same thing with users, with subscriptions, with products and all the other artifacts in the system, like certificates and authorization service. You can get statistics, right? You can't write statistics, but you can definitely get it. And for here, I'm actually making a query for reports by time. So it's an aggregate traffic for my API starting Monday or whatever week from now, from week ago. And if I make a call, I'm going to get actually all the stats right there, right? So it's a comma delimited format. Very nice. So you can actually drag it into your spreadsheet and, do pretty graphs with it.
So it looks like this management API is great for if you want to build your own administration system, want to build your own reporting mechanism, like you can do it all through this management API.
Absolutely. And the other nice thing with it is if you can automate management of your API system, if you want to integrate it somehow into lifecycle with your API development. So there's many, many use cases for this API. And that's why we made it very open-ended, very sort of flexible. And at the same time, we're basically trying to expose everything you can do manually, you can do through API. So that's sort of the principle.
Very cool.
So awesome. A good question about the XML, the JSON conversion. I'm noticing that it just sort of created these JSON elements for each of the XML elements, sort of a one-to-one. Mm-hmm. Does it handle XML attributes? And is there a way to specify a custom conversion if you want to?
So right now we have actually a couple of types of conversions that we do, and they are mechanical, right? So there's not a lot of variability you can put in it. We actually will be adding some features which will allow you more control over these things. But for now, these are kind of two types, and essentially you get sort of default rendering. We do sort of one we call JavaScript friendly, the other one is sort of direct.
Okay.
Cool. All right, so let me go and maybe look at some other features here on this page. So we've got external identities. This is sort of an old one, but it's a nice one. It allows you, as an API publisher, to allow your developers to sign in with different accounts they already have with internet services. And in this case, I enable Google and Microsoft. So if you're a developer coming from public and you want to sign up for the API, you can use your Google account or Microsoft account.
Okay.
So that's pretty nice.
Very cool.
This feature delegation is actually quite useful. So imagine situations, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's actually very powerful. So what it allows you to do, imagine you already have, as an API publisher, you already have a portal with a bunch of users, and you know how to manage users. And moreover, your products maybe require subscriptions, require you to launch some kind of server-side workflow, or collect some payments, right? So you need to really sort of override the defaults that we have in the system. So the way we're solving this problem right now is to basically say, you know what? Give us a delegation endpoint, which can be secured by this key, basically, so that you can authenticate that it's coming from us. And all these sign operations that deal with users or with product subscriptions, we will delegate to that endpoint. That endpoint can be a website, it can be an API, it can be whatever you want to do. And you basically will get full context for this operation that we are sending you. And then you can take care of it and integrate with us back with an API through our API, right? To manipulate, and make sure that the state in our system corresponds to what you needed to do. But also we have this wonderful, very, very important and powerful capabilities to get an SSO token for a user, which means that if, for instance, I'm signing in, we will redirect you to this portal, right, that you already had.
Mm-hmm.
You sign that user in using your credentials, and then you redirect them to our system as a single sign-on experience. So this is kind of complete integration. I'll show you how it works.
That's very cool.
So right now I'm signing as administrator, so I'm going to sign out and try to sign in. And I have this home, you know, this site that we wrote as a test for this delegation feature, right? It's kind of very simplistic, but as you can see here, I'm not logged in yet. But you can kind of see products, right? And you know, when it fetches products right now, it actually uses our API to go back. And it's not that our APIs are slow, you saw how fast they are. It's probably the site is spinning up because
sure.
it was dormant.
Makes sense.
So you can see these are products that we just saw, like Special, for example. It's right there. You can look at some details here. To look at details, you actually need to sign in. It's a little bit wacky, right? Because again, it's a test site. It's not actually something that we're shipping.
Mm-hmm.
You can also look at the users in my system, right? And there are some settings, right, that allow you to set that delegation, which actually deal with Smappy, right? This is your, you know, you recognize that identifier secret key and management API URL that we, you know, acquire from this API management tab, right? And then from delegation settings, right, include basically where to delegate to back, right, to the portal, and then validation key so that they can verify that when redirect happens, it comes from us.
Mm-hmm.
So very simple configuration. So let's make this happen. So let's say I'm coming to this thing and I'm signing in. So what happens is I'm redirected to this site at this point, right? So here I can actually, I don't even want to sign in because I'm not a user here. So let me create a new account. So I'm going to create an account with simple password 123, right? Actually 456 because this I think requires.
It's twice as hard now.
Yeah. So it's, and then I'm going to click register. So watch what happens. Right, so what happened is this site created a user account in its database,
mm-hmm.
shared an account in our database, and then redirected us, and now we are, you know, I'm logged in as that user. If I go into my profile, I can see my email address, my name, et cetera, and if I need to manipulate that information, I'm going to be redirected back there.
So this basically allows you to do your own custom authentication, your custom user management.
Exactly.
Just tie back into the API manager.
Yeah, exactly. And we are, at this point, we call ourselves as we are sort of dependent portal, essentially, right?
Great.
So same thing with subscriptions, right? So if I go to subscriptions and I want to, sign up for start a product and click subscribe, I'm redirected here, right? Mm-hmm. And here you can actually, kick off some backend processes or some workflows to validate who I am, or maybe even collect some money from me. And then when all is said and done, boom, right, I have a product. Again,
cool.
After they verified that it's okay to sign me up, they called our API, they created a subscription, now I have the keys, now I can start actually using the product. And this is actually my place as a developer, right? This is, what I see information about all my subscriptions, and then of course use the statistics, about how I use the API.
Very cool.
That's really cool.
So that's a delegation feature. Pretty nice, I agree. So let's close this guy out and log in as an admin one more time. And I'll show you two more cool things. Let's go to security tab. And here we've got client certs, right? So we are sitting in the cloud, and there are these backend services we discussed, right? They can be anywhere. People want to secure the connection between proxy and backend services,
mm-hmm.
right? And we introduced basically mutual certificate authentication is one of the most secure options today that you can have. You can imagine more secure things and different things, but this is what we have today. And essentially, what you do is on this tab, you can upload a bunch of certificates. And then within an API, like for instance this one, you can actually go into security tab of that and set it to either none, like in Calkspace, or mutual certificate authentication. Then you can choose from certificates that you registered, which one you want to use. And at this point, all communication will with this service from the proxy. Will be done using this mutual certificate authentication, and the service can rest, confident in the fact that it's only us who can call them.
So then you just make sure on your API scene, wherever it is, that you're making sure that certificate is valid.
Exactly. So when you upload certificate, it's basically PFX format, protected by password. We open it up, we validate it, and then every time we call that backend, we're gonna authenticate with that.
Great.
And this coupled with stable IP for your service, right, which allows you to set filtering rules.
Mm-hmm.
Provides for a pretty secure option for getting back to your backend.
Is that optional, or is that just something built into API management that you're going to have a stable IP?
This is actually, we are leaning on the Azure platform.
Okay.
So this is not something we implement. This is our networking team provides us
okay,
with that.
Okay, great.
So, and over here, sort of lastly, let's go and see the last feature. that I wanted to show you today, which is OAuth 2 support. And here you can actually define as many authorization services you want to, right? Some organizations may have just one, some may have many. For fun, I just created a Salesforce authorization for server. This actually truly goes to Salesforce. You can see, you know, authorization endpoint, token point. I created a developer account with the Salesforce, registered authorization for server for Salesforce, and actually created the API that is proxies essentially Salesforce API right here, right? So this guy essentially has one operation. And this is like hello world, mm-hmm. essentially in Salesforce. The simplest thing you can possibly do is say get objects, right? And basically it's just, you know, pass as objects, and it should, you know, give you all the objects under your account, right? And but the trick is, right, that this thing is actually protected by OAuth 2, right? So I basically said, yeah, for this guy, I want OAuth 2. You know, anybody can call, right? Which mm-hmm. is probably not a good idea in this case, but, you know, from the proxy to backend standpoint, it's OAuth 2, and here's the authorization server to use. And so now, if I go to developer portal and try to invoke that service, let's go here. Here we go. Right, in the interactive console, you know, you'll see immediately, right, that it requires OAuth, et cetera. So here right now, no OAuth, right? But if I say I want to authenticate actually, and I have to, using Salesforce, you know, boom, I'm getting prompted, right? At this point, I can actually enter my credentials for Salesforce account. And I hope it's not going to ask me to do Salesforce. So let me click this guy. Yeah, of course, right? So gotta love that. Security, right? So they're gonna send me a code, which is I'm gonna enter right now.
Mm-hmm.
So verifying code. Done, right? I already authorized this app, so it doesn't ask me to authorize again, just authenticate. And so now, after we authenticated, I can make a call, and voila, you know, I'm actually making an authenticated call to Salesforce, getting all my objects, right?
So now, if I'm going to consume this API that you're exposing from an application, does that basically my user or my application, you'd have to log in with your Salesforce account and then pass in your token?
Correct. So at this point, basically, we don't facilitate client-side authentication with it,
right.
Just console. So you'll have to actually acquire this guy yourself, right? And normally, if you think about it, for mobile applications, most providers have actually SDKs, right? So that sort of has to be done that way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just included with their request, and then, you know, we'll handle it. But for us, right, we actually need to understand the OAuth on the back end and know how to work with that, and that's what I showed.
Great. Very cool. And it's cool that you can actually add anything you want for that OAuth, too.
So. Yeah, so you can actually proxy any service. It's actually a lot of fun. You can try, you know, we did, you know, I tried Uber and, you know, lots of other sort of public APIs. It's very cool. And you can actually do nice things. Like, for instance, you can hide the keys to those services from your consumers, right? So if you have, like, shared key that you don't want to expose to your users,
mm-hmm.
right? You can proxy it through API management and can insert the key. So there's a lot of sort of use cases for using API management capabilities to proxy various kinds of APIs.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. These are some really great new features.
Thank you.
So where can we tell people to go when they want to read more about API management and the new features, including the management library, API, and all that stuff?
So excellent question. So this is our Twitter handle.
Okay,
so definitely a good way
we'll
to keep it in mind.
Just put it right there in the video.
Yeah. So we are going to definitely you know, mention it in the notes. And then I've had you know, have a bunch of URLs here. No need to write them down. We're going to put them in the notes as well.
Absolutely.
So this has all documentation, forums, changelog to keep up with the updates, videos, and things.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and showing us the new features of API management.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And Elliot, thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Everybody out there, thanks for watching. Make sure to follow the Cloud Cover Show, and we will see you next time.